This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
The Globe.
Worldwide Wave. Tuesday nights at 6 on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9. Radio that's out and proud. Joy.
You are on Saturday Magazine Joy 94.9, currently produced by Fiona Brooke. But if you want to fill her shoes, well, you know what to do. Our next guest is the Deputy Lord Mayor of Melbourne, elected Deputy Lord Mayor, Nick Rees. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning, Macca. And I believe you've got Misha there with
Misha,
you.
Yeah.
Hello, Nick.
Now, you and Misha are old mates, aren't you?
We go back a long, long way. I think we did our cadetship when we first started out in journalism decades ago. And I've been I'm a huge admirer of everything he's done at The Conversation as well.
Well, there you go. He's going to be nice to you.
That's very nice. Well, Nick's always been nice. I remember sitting in shorthand training with Nick. I'm actually suffering through it. So.
Oh, shorthand. Oh, my God.
You'll love this, Macca. We had a very strict shorthand teacher. Who wouldn't mind, you know, wrapping you over the knuckles if you weren't, you know, forming your shorthand quite right. And so she quickly became known as Madam Lash.
Yes.
Ah. Amazing. Can I just, for the younger listeners, can someone just explain what shorthand is, please?
So shorthand is a... Yes, this is before everyone record everything. It's just a form of writing really quickly, like a special sort of language.
Oh, thank you for that, Misha.
Yes. I'd never really learnt it in the end, despite Madam Lash.
Yes. Yeah, well, Madam Lash went on to work in a club, didn't she, in Queensbury Street, I think? Perhaps not. Now, Nick is also, like myself, more than a bit fascinated with United States politics. Nancy Pelosi is stepping down as Speaker of the House of Representatives. Has Kevin McCarthy got the job for sure yet, Nick, or is he having trouble with the numbers?
Look, I believe he has, notwithstanding a few wobbles, but he won't take up the position until January next year. So Nancy still serves till then, and this week had as one of her final acts, she oversaw the passage of a bill to protect same-sex and interracial unions across the United States. What a fitting tribute to such an accomplished woman and an accomplished career.
So this legislation is a big thing, isn't it? A lot of people, you know, we think about same-sex unions and how important that is, but interracial unions, you know, for a lot of American history, interracial unions, let alone anything else, were illegal.
Yes, there are indeed two parts to this legislation, or three actually, that the states will be required to recognise legal marriages regardless of sex, race, ethnicity or national origin. This follows a 2015 Supreme Court decision which gave effect to this, but as we often see in the US, that has given rise to a myriad of efforts to potentially roll that back at a state level or through other bits of legislation. Now this new bill that was approved this week by Congress will, it seems, give definitive protection to marriages between race and same-sex marriage as well. It doesn't actually go quite as far as the Supreme Court decision did in 2015. That decision required states to allow same-sex couples to marry, but the compromise with this bill is that states are now required to recognise all marriages that were legally performed. So that has meant that there have been some progressive critics of this because it doesn't go as far as the 2015 decision, but overall people see it as a very, very good outcome.
So that means that some states, you could still, the state could say you can't get married in the state, but if you are married in a same-sex union, it has to be recognised. Is that right?
That's essentially it, Misha. Yeah. So yes, you could get married somewhere else in the US and you'd be recognised in that state. It also requires that all current marriages are recognised as well. Look, as you could well imagine, there was some, you know, the usual kind of right-wing crazy nut jobs were out there criticising it. So, Republican Vicky Hartzler, she came out and said, God's perfect design is indeed marriage between one man and one woman for life. And it doesn't matter what you think or what I think, that's what the Bible says. But fortunately, not all of her Republican colleagues agreed with that. In fact, 47 of them broke party lines and voted with the Democrats. Mm. That meant that it was fairly comfortably passed in the end, 250 votes to 169.
So Nick, just on that, I was interested in what the number of Republicans that supported this, what that says about sort of political progressivism within the Republican Party, or whether it was sort of Nancy Pelosi's expert wrangling. Do you know anything about, what sort of the predominant attitudes within the Republican Party are?
Look, I would say the Republican Party is split on this issue. I would say that, well, as these numbers would suggest, 160-plus Republicans oppose same-sex marriage, seemingly have concerns around interracial unions, but I suspect it was because of the same-sex component as to why they voted against it. But 47-plus Republicans crossed the aisle and voted for it. So, you know, this is a deeply divisive issue within the Republican Party, and it sort of splits their religious, very, very strongly religious representatives from the slightly more moderate Republicans.
Another subject entirely before we... I want to talk about, some statues that are happening. I read in The Economist recently that I think Scotland and Wales, Christianity is now a minority religion.
It's gone. It's interesting.
Under 50%.
Yes, and look, and it's also the case that religiosity hasn't been a barrier to progressive social reform in many countries as well. Like, you look at Ireland, for example.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
You know, a devoutly Catholic country, and yet they have strongly supported same-sex marriage, as has Italy as well. So, again, Italy, a very sort of, religious country, many would say, but it hasn't sort of held up social progress. The US seems to be almost unique amongst advanced democracies in still having at least a federal legislative body which has held out against many of these reforms.
Yes, it's quite interesting. Now, statues, Nick. There's the city of Melbourne, and I know you're very, very heavily involved in this, as is Lord Mayor Sally Capp. There's a bit of a lack of statues of women around generally, but particularly in the city of Melbourne. What are we doing about this?
Yeah, so let me start by giving you a statistic that will make you fall off your chair.
You don't want me to fall off the chair. I'll damage the building.
There are 580 statues in Melbourne. Of those 580, just 9 of them are women. There are more statues of fairies and nymphs in Melbourne than there are of actual real women who lived in Melbourne. And when you remove the statues of figures like Queen Victoria, the number is even lower. It's just, it's just beyond absurd, Macca. And at the City of Melbourne, we're going to do something about it. So this week we passed a resolution asking our public art body to put to us opportunities for the erection of more female statues in Melbourne. We've also asked that they be figurative in form. We don't want sort of abstract or allegorical memorials. We actually want to be able to look at the statue and go, oh yes, I know who that is. That's a real woman and she lived here in Melbourne. And we've finally asked the management at the City of Melbourne to give us a suggestion of 3. The first 3 statues of real women that we want to honour with a statue in our city.
What's allegorical?
Which we hope will open a really great conversation, a really great debate for Melbourne as to who should be the first 3 to be honoured.
What's allegorical?
allegorical means mythical in presentation. So for example, there's a statue in South Melbourne, or there's a memorial in South Melbourne to Olivia Zakharoff, great human rights campaigner, very involved in the AIDS sort of campaigns of the 1980s. But she's been memorialised, great woman, she's been memorialised with three concrete bollards, an abstract sort of culture. And it's kind of like, look, if we kind of keep doing that across the city, we're not, you know, the children of this city, when they walk our streets, our parks, they're not going to see these representations of great women in the past. I'll instead see abstract sculpture, which doesn't quite tell the story of these achievements in the way we'd like.
So, Nick, just to cut to the chase, because we're going to run out of time. Who are the three, you know, there's going to be three female statues erected. Have you had any thoughts on who you think should be memorialised in that way?
Look, I've put three names. I've floated three names, and I really stress just floated three names that kind of spark the conversation. I really want there to be a debate, and, you know, we'll have a process for deciding this, and certainly won't be my decision. So Louisa Briggs, who lived in Melbourne, and she was a Wurundjeri woman. She was stolen by sealers, went to Tasmania, came back to country, became a nurse, a matron, and a leader for her dispossessed people. Another one I've put forward is Vida Goldstein, the first woman anywhere in the world to nominate for election to a national parliament. And then finally, I love the story of Helena Rubinstein, who opened her first makeup store on Collins Street in the 1890s, went on to build a business empire, US, UK. She was the richest woman in the world in about 1910. And I reckon most Melbournians have forgotten about
her.
And so I reckon she deserves to be elevated as well.
We're out of time, Nick. I'm sorry. We've got to cut you short. I know we're going to see you soon. Thanks for this. I think it's a great initiative. I don't think three's enough. Make it 12.
Agree. Three's just to get us started.
Yeah.
And I'd love to come back to have a longer conversation with your listeners one morning on who should be that first group of statues.
Right.
In that first group of statues.
Thank you. Nick Rees, Deputy Lord Mayor of Melbourne. Bye-bye.
See you guys.
Cheers. Paul.
Say goodbye.
I've said goodbye.
Okay.
This is Saturday Magazine.
What does queer mean?
Some people have trouble fitting into a box, and some people strut right past that box down a glorious path of freedom and self-expression. Queer was once a slur, but now it's been reclaimed as a celebration. It's an umbrella term covering the entire LGBTIQA+ rainbow. But it's more than that. It's also an identity. Queer means changing the system instead of changing yourself. It's both an expression of identity and a political ideal. Want to learn more? Check out Joy's inclusion and diversity training. Visit joy.org.au/services.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.